If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hello, and welcome back to ACRAC. I'm Jed Wolpaw, and I'm thrilled to have with me today someone who was a co-resident of mine, though a couple years ahead of me, way back in the day, and who has done amazing things since then. I've been hoping I could get her on the show, and finally, we have her here, and I'm really excited. I have with me Dr. Tiffany Moon, who's a board-certified anesthesiologist, entrepreneur, and author of the national bestseller, Joy Prescriptions. Dr. Moon attended Cornell University, graduated at the top of her medical school class at the age of just 23. She completed her residency at UCSF, where I also was a co-resident of hers. She's been named one of D Magazine's best doctors, has been voted faculty of the year, and has authored over 60 peer-reviewed papers. She also serves as an oral board examiner for the American Board of Anesthesiology. And beyond medicine, she's the founder of Aromesthesia Candle Company, Three Moons Wine, and Lead Her Summit, which empowers female entrepreneurs and leaders. Her debut book, Joy Prescriptions, debuted at number one on USA Today's list for biography and self-help. So amazing stuff that you have accomplished, Tiffany. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jed.
So we were residents together, as I said, at UCSF. You were a couple of years ahead of me. We have not been in touch since that time, but I'm excited for this chance to catch up a little bit. You have done a ton of interesting things since then. So take me through a little bit of the highlights. You obviously are an anesthesiologist, as many of our listeners are, but you've also done all these other things. So take me through that. How did you, from finishing residency or maybe it started in residency, but how did you decide to branch out from clinical anesthesia and do all these other things?
You know, when I graduated residency in 2012, I never had aspirations to do anything outside of medicine. I really just wanted to be a really good anesthesiologist. I wanted to take care of patients. I wanted to do clinical research, and I wanted to mentor and educate medical students and residents, which, you know, is academic anesthesia, right? And I wanted to be a good wife and a mom. And that was it. I never thought anything about reality TV, being an author, being on social media, being a motivational speaker. Like, this was not a planned thing. All those things came later, which I guess we'll get into.
Yeah. So it's so interesting, right? I think that so many people either never think beyond the clinical realm, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Or they do, but they don't know how to make that leap. They kind of have these ideas. And I've talked to people who are wonderful clinicians and who say, well, maybe one day when I retire, you know, I will write a book or I will start a company. But I think taking the ideas and making them into reality is something that you've done multiple times and that is something a lot of people would love to hear about. So, you know, let's let's talk a little bit about what came first. So you obviously you took a job out of residency and you were working as an anesthesiologist. I believe you were already married at the time. So you were a wife. I don't remember if you had kids right away.
No, I struggled with infertility and didn't have my twins until 2014.
Okay.
So got married, finished residency in 2012. And then my twins were born in 2014.
Okay. So the marriage and the finishing residency and starting as an anesthesiologist, that came first. And then what was the first branch point where you broke away, or not broke away, it's not the right word, but added on to your clinical career?
I would say around 2018, 2019, I started posting on social media, but I was scared of what people would think if they saw me on there. And so I never posted as my own name. I had a Instagram handle, which was at the Style Doctor. And I would show my face. Like, I wasn't one of those accounts that was trying to be like anonymous, like Anesthesia God, you know, where you never like see his face. But I also wasn't trying to promote myself. And I would just post about fashion, beauty, skincare, maybe a trip that I had taken. And really, it was just my little personal diary of things outside of the hospital. In fact, I never posted about being an anesthesiologist or about anything that happened within the walls of the hospital, because I was starting to feel a little bit of burnout from, you know, being clinical. I was full-time, had always been full-time. I went back to work 6 weeks after I had twins. I distinctly remember like pumping in the OR in between cases and like running to go pick up the next patient and all that sort of thing. I was head of our residency recruitment, so I was responsible for reviewing all the ERAS applications, figuring out who we were going to interview. We had like 15 interview days, and I would make our rank order list, you know, of who we wanted to match with. I was taking liver transplant call. I was taking trauma call, and it just was, I felt like I was eating, breathing anesthesia all the time. And I kind of lost a little bit of myself because I like to get dressed up and be pretty. I mean, back in residency, when we rounded, like I wore nice outfits and high heels to round in the ICU, you know, because that's just what I like to do. That's just who I am. And I felt I lost a little part of myself. So my Instagram was really just a little repository of my online diary. I never thought that it would catch on with people. But as things go, I started building a following. It got bigger and bigger. Then when the pandemic happened in 2020 was when I started my candle company, because I found myself with all this extra time on my hands because spring break had gotten canceled. I had actually gotten asked to speak at the World Congress of Anesthesiologists, which was going to be in Prague. That got moved to virtual. So now I'm not going to Prague. And just every life had been canceled, right? So I had all this extra time on my hands. And I was like, oh, I'll start making candles in my basement. I'll call them all anesthesia names, right? So the first candle I ever made was propofol candle. Nice. And then after that, I think I made like sucks or rock or lidocaine. I don't remember what was the second one. And I named it aromesthesia because it's half of the word aromatherapy and half of the word anesthesia. And I thought that that would be cute. And I looked online and nobody had taken that name. So I was like, great, that'll be the name of my company. I learned about, you know, what it's like to have a little online shop, and sell stuff and run into supply issues and inventory management and all those little things that we never learn as an anesthesiologist, you know, but all of a sudden I had this little like side business. Then I started posting on TikTok a little bit more because my stepdaughter, who was 15 at the time, was always like doing these dances. And I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, do one with me. It's really cute. So I did one with her. And then I made my own TikTok, posted something super random. It was like quarantine fashion. And we had made like a dress out of toilet paper and like something else. It was just so stupid. And then all of a sudden the news station called me and they were like, oh, we're doing a segment about doctors on social media. And I was like, okay. So they wanted to interview me about that. And it all led one thing to another, right? And then Housewives happened shortly after that. And that was probably like the big catalyst, you know? So before I joined Real Housewives, I had probably like 20,000 followers. And then when Housewives started showing on Bravo once a week for every few months, I would wake up and my follower count would be up by like 10,000. Like, it was just crazy. Then,
and where did that, Tiffany, that, so did you, is, I don't know anything about it. Is that something that you submit a, you know, a tape for, and then do you do a tryout, or did they see you on social media and contact you? How did that come about?
It was, my friend introduced me to the producers because I had a friend, Deandra, who had been on the Real Housewives of Dallas since season 2. I was only on season 5, and she had had a number of charity events, birthday parties, things like that. And I remember going to them, like after being in the OR all day, I would like change and slap some makeup on. And I remember the first time I went to one of her parties and there was like a guy outside with this sign that was like, we're recording. So by entering, you agree to be taped or blah, 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 like sign this release. And everyone had to like sign this little piece of paper before we went inside. I didn't think anything of it. Then a few days after that party, she called me and said that I had caught the eye of one of the producers and they wanted to know if I wanted to be on the Real Housewives. And I was like, no, like, like, no, like what I like work full time as an academic anesthesiologist. I'm like running 2 clinical trials and potty training twins, to, you know, use the toilet properly. Like, no, I don't have an interest in reality TV. So she dropped it. And then the next year at the end of the season, I guess they must have said something to her again. And she asked me again. And she said, I really think it'll be good because you're really well spoken. You have a keen fashion sense. And I think the world would, you know, like, I forgot what she said, but something about like, you know, you can show that a woman can be a serious doctor, but also let loose, have fun, have an interest in beauty and fashion and be a good mom and all these things. And I think a lot of, you know, girls would see that and like look up to you. And I was like, do you think? And she was like, I do. And she's like, well, will you just take a call with the producer because they've been bugging me, and like, just do me a favor and just have a call with them. I was like, okay, it can't hurt to have a call. So we all know how that turned out. It was a phone call, then a Zoom meeting. Then they flew me out to LA to meet the executive producer. And then like a few months later, they were in my house with like an entire camera crew. It was crazy. I had no idea it was like that level of production.
And so that, yeah, that is wild. And what a, you know, it seems to me like the kind of thing where you kind of say yes along the way and you don't really see how it will turn out. And then all of a sudden it's, you're in it.
Yeah. I mean, at all of these steps, I remember having a phone call and like having the Zoom and flying out to LA and telling them like, I don't know if this is going to work. Like, I'm still full time. Even when I filmed, I was still full time. I have young kids at home. I don't want to be misrepresented in some way that's going to affect my family. And it was just continual assurances from their side that was like, no, we just want to see, we really appreciate your transparency. Like, cause I didn't want them to feel like I was leading them on, but never in my wildest dreams did I think that they were going to pick me, because I knew that there was a handful of other Dallas women who wanted the job. I mean, they're like sucking up to the current cast, submitting videos, trying to find out where they're going to be filming so they can try to sneak into the party. I mean, people want this role, and not to sound like an ungrateful person, but like, I was not one of those people that was chasing it. And maybe perhaps that's what made them pick me, right? I have no idea what goes through these people's minds, but I really didn't think as I was going through this sort of audition process that I was actually going to get picked. I kind of wanted to see like how far I could go and it would be like a cool story to tell my kids one day, you know? Like, did you know that mommy was almost a Real Housewife? You know, I never actually thought that it was going to happen. And then when once it started happening, it was just like, you're strapped into the roller coaster and you can't get off. You know, you're in the middle of the ride. Even if you feel like you're going to throw up and you want to scream, like you can't get off in the middle of the roller coaster.
You have described why I don't go on roller coasters. That's exactly what.
So, I also do not go on roller coasters.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting. So you must agree up front, right, that they can do
you
what they
give
do.
Away yeah. all your rights. They send you this legal document from NBC Universal that is pretty ironclad. And I actually hired an entertainment lawyer and paid them a sizable amount of money to read through this contract. And they were like, yeah, this is standard reality TV. It basically says that they can show you in any which way. They can purposely take like splice the words that come out of your mouth and stitch them together to make it seem like you said those words in continuity when in fact you did not. Like it basically says in their contract that they can do whatever. You have no legal recourse. You have no say in what gets shown. Like when you sign, you are signing away all of it. And I think for anyone who's considering being on reality TV, like that's just the way it is. I did try to push back and my lawyer did get a few things into my contract because I said, well, look, I'm a professional. Like, not to be mean, but none of the other housewives on Dallas even had a job. You know, I don't think they ever collected a W-2 even, or even a 1099. So, like I have a professional reputation, which I have done a lot of work to have. And if you stitch something incorrectly, that makes it seem like, you know, I'm not a good doctor like that. That's not okay. You know, like if we're in a little tiff with one of the other housewives over something stupid, fine, but you cannot do that as it relates to my professional career. And we were able to carve that into my contract, which obviously the other girls didn't need. But you know, professional things withstanding, everything else was fair game for them to take their creative liberties with which they did. But not yeah. not too bad. For me, it wasn't too bad. There was one scene where one of the other housewives said something and then they inserted me rolling my eyes. And those two things did not happen temporally related. So it looked some sort of way, but again, it wasn't a big deal.
So take me to that moment where you've done the interviews, you've kind of said, okay, guys, I'll think about it, but I'm not 100% sure. And then you get the contract. They say, we want you. You have this lawyer look at it. You know, you go a little back and forth, but the moment when you have to make the final, do you sign this thing or not? We know the outcome. You decided to do it, but what was that decision like? Obviously, I'm sure your husband was involved, but like what, you know, what was going through your mind, the major pros, cons, and then in the end, what made you decide to go through with it?
Yeah, I mean, my husband and I distinctly remember this. We have a wine cellar in our basement. So after we put the kids to bed, we went down to the basement and opened a bottle of wine and sat down to have a talk. And I think I got out a paper and pencil and was like pros on one side, cons on another. And, you know, it's kind of like when we're evaluating residency programs. I remember I had a spreadsheet and I had all the programs that I interviewed. And it was like, how happy are the residents? Breadth of clinical experience, like rotation, you know, like all the things that we evaluate residencies for. It was the same thing with housewives. It was like, you know, how could this negatively impact my career, but how might it boost my career? You know, and this is the thing. If I was a dermatologist or a plastic surgeon, it would have been like a no-brainer, right? Because it would have helped my business, right? If you have a derm clinic or a plastic surgery practice, I mean, business will be booming, yeah. Assuming that, you know, you represent yourself well. But as an anesthesiologist at a level one trauma hospital that's Dallas's safety net hospital where my patients aren't even insured, like it's not going to help my business. It might hurt my professional reputation where I've worked, you know, a really long time to be like an ABA oral examiner. Like that's a big deal and not a position that I hold lightly. And so I really had to consider it. And at the end of the day, my husband said to me, he was like, I was like, what if they, you know, do something, splice something that makes me look terrible or whatever. And he's like, I just don't think they're going to do that. And you're not going to say something that's going to get you in trouble because you don't say those things anyway. He's like, you're kind, you have no skeletons in the closet. Like you're not going to say something bad. He's like, I've known you for like 10 years, you know? And he said to me, will you regret it more if you do it or don't do it? He said, if you turn it down, which you totally can, and they'll just move happily on to the next person in line, will you always wonder, like, what if I had done that TV show back when, you know, what if I had just taken that leap of faith, like, you know, telling my grandkids one day, like when grandma was young, I did this crazy thing. And I had never done any crazy things. I'm guessing like you, I was a very good student, a good girl, went to church, like never as so much served a detention or had an unpaid parking ticket, like just clean as a whistle. And I kind of thought like, what if this is my chance to like do something a little bit rebellious where nobody would think it of me? And I remember when I told some of my circle of friends that I was going to do Housewives, they were like, are you okay? Like, are you febrile? Did you catch COVID? Like, are you thinking straight? Because it was so the antithesis of what everyone thought that I would do.
Yeah, I can see that. And I can also imagine the enticing kind of excitement of it, right? This is something totally new. And, you know, I mean, who hasn't thought it'd be fun to be on TV? And, you know, I mean, I can see the kind of the idea that this is a once in a lifetime chance and it'd be hard to pass up.
For sure. There was an element of flattery. Like, oh my God, you picked me out of like these other Dallas women that are, you know, big, blonde, busty in the scene. And I'm kind of, you know, relatively reserved. And yes, we go to a few charity events here or there, but I am not one of those people that's out in Dallas like every single night. I'm trying to put my kids to bed and prep for my cases the next day. You know what I mean? Like I live a relatively quiet life. But it was flattering to be chosen. I'm not going to lie. And Bravo TV, you know, like me, you know, it's almost like when somebody popular waves at you in high school in the hallway and you look behind you because you don't want to be the dork that waves back, but they were waving at the guy behind you, you know, and then you feel like an idiot. Like there was that element because I was such a dork growing up. Coming to America, learning English, going to school, graduating early. I mean, I was 19 when I graduated from Cornell and 23 when I graduated from medical school. Like I was a huge dork, but I always loved like beauty and fashion and all that kind of stuff. I just always loved it. And so now like Bravo is knocking on my door and they picked me. It was sort of like, oh my God, this is it. This is my chance to, you know, bloom a little bit.
Well, very cool. All right. So you do it and tell me some of the pros and cons. Now, once it was over, looking back, what were the best parts and what were the parts you could have left?
You know, if I could have filmed with a different cast from a different city, I think the experience would have been totally different. I think it's not necessarily the rigorousness of reality TV or the fact that they kind of pit you against each other and there has to be a little bit of drama. Of course there has to be a little bit of drama. It's a TV show, right? Like we're not going to if we're sitting around having a nice conversation, like people aren't going to pay attention to that. So I understood the assignment. But the women on my cast, at least half of them, were awful to me. Like literally awful. They were hazing me to drink. Which I'm like, how old are we? You know what I mean? These are like 40 something year old women. I told the producers on nights that I film where I have cases the next day, I have a 2-drink maximum and a 10 p.m. curfew, which they were cool with. production was cool. They would like call my driver and like make sure that I got home okay. Like they were like, no, we want you to be well rested. Cause I, again, was the only one on the cast who even remotely worked. But the other women, so I would have this alarm on my phone that went off at like 9:45 so they could call my car. And when the alarm went off, they would be like, oh, Tiffany's alarm's going off. Guess she has to go home. And, you know, they were like, let's take a shot. And I'm like, no, no, no. Like, I've already had two drinks. Like, I'm good. I don't want to take shots. It's Tuesday night. I don't know why you're taking shots. And they're like, oh, Tiffany doesn't want. And just like the stupidest, most juvenile middle school behavior from them. And, you know, they would whisper things when I wasn't around. And it's just, I mean, anybody who's ever been excluded knows the feeling when you're the other. And I was the other because all of them had filmed before and I was the only new girl. And I know what it's like to be the new girl. I went to 3 elementary schools, 2 middle schools, and 2 high schools. We moved a lot and I was always the new girl. And I was like, oh, this feeling again. Like I thought I had left this feeling behind, but apparently not. I really wish that I had a different cast and a different filming experience because I talked to a lot of other housewives from different cities, other franchises, and they actually make friends with some of their castmates and like have a good time. And it's not that I didn't have a good time at all. You know, there were moments where something funny happened and we were all laughing and, you know, having a moment, but overall the feeling was that I was always the other.
Yeah, I can see that being really hard. And I, of course, I don't know, but I would imagine there must have been a lot of jealousy on their part, right? I mean, here you are, you have the same job as them in this TV show, but you also are this incredibly accomplished doctor, right? I mean, that's got to be tough. I'm not defending the way they handle it. I just mean, it's got to be tough. And I think probably to feel adequate on their part when here you are, you're doing what they're doing on this acting thing, but you're also this incredibly intelligent, accomplished physician. And so I bet some of this was jealousy. You know, this was how it played out. And it's too bad that it played out that way.
Yeah. I mean, if they would have been nice to me, it, you know, I would have been nicer back and we could have formed real friendships. But it didn't work out that way.
Is there anything from now? How long was were you being filmed for how is a certain number of months?
Crazy. I was on for one season, but the principal filming for one season, at least for my show, was 12 weeks. And that was one of the conditions on which I actually agreed to do the show because I didn't know that. I thought, because I wasn't into reality TV, I never watched Real Housewives before I became one. I thought that they just like followed you around with cameras like 24/7. You know what I mean? Like I never really thought about it. But actually, filming is very scheduled. It's like Tuesday, we're going to do a family scene with you and your kids from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday night, there's going to be an all-cast party from 5 to midnight. Like, it's very scheduled. They run late a lot, but it's pretty, you know, set in stone. And it's only 12 weeks. And when I found that out at the beginning when they offered me a contract and I was like, oh crap, like I didn't think I'd make it this far. What do I do now? One of the ways they got me to sign on, they're like, look, Tiff, it's only 12 weeks. You can do anything for 12 weeks. And I was like, you know what? I can because I did residency and I had twins and breastfed them for 6 months. Like I can do anything for 12 weeks. So that was like the final thing that got me to sign on.
Yeah, I can see that's huge. I totally would have guessed it was 9 to 12 months.
No.
So that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so 3 months, a lot of filming and a lot of challenges. Anything you look back? So one thing you mentioned that was a plus was that, you know, like nightly, it seemed like your followers went up by 10,000, right? So you were getting a ton of followers, which is going to bring people to your businesses, raise your profile and allow you to maybe do other things. So that's a plus that came of it. Is there anything else you look back on and think, yeah, that's something good that came of this?
Hey, folks, before we get Tiffany's answer on that, I just want to say how great it is to have TrueLearn Smart Banks as a rockstar returning sponsor. I've used TrueLearn for my residents for years, and it's hands down the best smart bank out there. The questions are excellent, and the answers have clear explanations that break down why each choice is correct or incorrect. And now you can create flashcards, which are a key tool for high-quality studying and maximizing test performance. The education research is clear that spaced repetition with these kinds of tools is the best way to learn and retain information. We use their ITE, Basic, and Advanced Smart Banks for our residents with each 1,000-plus questions, realistic visuals and graphs, and even a calculator that mimics what you have on the actual exam. Our residents love it and get great results. TrueLearn even has a CME Smart Bank where you can get AMA, PRA, Category 1 credits after you finish training, and an adult cardiac anesthesiology Smart Bank as well. Go to TrueLearn.com and use code ACRAC to get $25 off residency exams, USMLE, and Comlex Smart Bank subscriptions of 90 days or longer, and up to 20% off other healthcare exam subscriptions. We rely on TrueLearn for our test prep, and I recommend you do the same. TrueLearn.com and use code ACRAC. And now let's get back to Tiffany.
Yeah, I think just the exposure in general, you know, and even now when I see like random clips from season 5 surface, like sometimes I'll see, I'm like, why is this showing right now? I am generally proud of the way I presented myself. Like, who you saw of me on TV was me. It wasn't all of me because, you know, they film like 10 hours, then you see like 10 minutes of it. It's crazy how much gets left on the cutting room floor. But, like, I'm proud of the way I showed up and represented myself. There were some moments that were not my finest, but that's okay. You know, I got, you know, a lot of people that said, I really look up to you. You're this anesthesiologist and a mom and doing all these other things. And then I had haters too that said really terrible, mean things that internet trolls say. So you have to take the good with the bad. And after a while, it all just kind of, I don't know, falls off your back anyway.
Yeah. Well, and isn't that, I mean, in a way, we all, of course, are not always our best selves, right? So if anything, I think it probably humanizes you to a lot of people, right? It's like, okay, here's this person who isn't always perfect. And so tell me a little bit about the summits that you do, because you do kind of motivational speaking and empowerment work for, I think, for women specifically, although maybe it's broader, I'm not sure, you'll tell me. But I wonder if some of your success there is about people being able to relate to you. And as someone who isn't perfect, right? You're someone who's a real person just like anyone else, and you make mistakes and maybe aren't always your best self, but you've overcome a lot and can speak to them of that.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey folks, hunger strikes and you're exhausted. There's something healthy in your fridge or pantry that you should be making, but you just don't have it in you. Sound familiar? For me, eating healthy isn't a willpower problem, it's a setup problem. At least it was until I found Factor. Factor solves the setup problem with fully prepared meals designed by dietitians and crafted by chefs delivered right to your door. My wife and I want to give our kids healthy food that they will actually eat. We don't have time to cook from scratch. That's why we use Factor, and you should too. Inside your Factor box, you'll find lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole food ingredients, and healthy fats. It's always fresh, never frozen. My kids think Factor tastes like restaurant food, and honestly, they're right. Some of our favorites right now are the Southwest Chicken Bowl and the Thai Chicken Peanut Salad. With over 100 rotating weekly meals, there's always something new to look forward to. Try the newly launched ready-to-eat salads with vibrant ingredients like elote corn and miso edamame. I wouldn't have believed it until I tried it, and now I can't get enough. Get Factor if you want all the flavor and none of the fuss. Head to factormeals.com/ACRAC50OFF and use code ACRAC50OFF to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscription only while supplies last until September 27th, 2026. See website for more details.
Hey folks, lately I've been more intentional about what I wear day to day, leaning into pieces that feel easy, comfortable, and still put together. It just makes getting dressed simpler. Quince has been my go-to. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are clean, and everything just works without needing to overthink it. Quince has all the wardrobe staples for spring. Think 100% European linen shorts and shirts from $34. Lightweight, breathable, and comfortable, but still look put together. And clean 100% Pima cotton tees with softness that has to be felt. Their pants also hit that same balance, relaxed and comfortable, but still polished enough to wear pretty much anywhere. Everything is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're getting premium materials without the markup. I absolutely love the zip-up fleece I got from Quince. I wear it all the time, and it might be the only thing my wife and daughters actually compliment me on. And it didn't cost anywhere near what I thought it would. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/ACRAC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ACRAC for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. quince.com/ACRAC.
Hey there, folks. If you work in healthcare, you might already know this, but in case you don't, it's Nurses Week, a time to shout out the incredible people who keep us healthy and also happen to be some of the best humans you and I know. Huge shout out and thank you to the ICU and OR and PrEP and PACU nurses who I work with every day. You all are the best. And to celebrate, Figs just dropped new limited edition colors and styles you can't not love. Best news of all, everything is 20% off during Nurses Week. From scrubs to outerwear to footwear and beyond, Figs truly gets what healthcare professionals need to look sharp, feel good, and take on just about anything. So, if you're in healthcare, don't miss out on 20% off for Nurses Week, happening May 6th through May 12th. Go to wearfigs.com. That's 20% off during Nurses Week at wearfigs.com.
Hey folks, this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You may know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month, a good reminder that whatever you're going through, you don't have to go through it alone. You know, from time to time, I've struggled with anxiety and insomnia, and when that happens, having someone to talk to get unbiased support really helps. Use this opportunity to check in with yourself. If you've been feeling overwhelmed, stuck, anxious, or unsure, I hope you know these feelings are more common than you think, and you don't have to navigate them alone. With over 30,000 therapists who are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp does the initial matching for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. And with 12-plus years of experience and an industry-leading match fulfillment rate, they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. You don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
All right, and we're back.
Yeah. So all the things that I learned from being an entrepreneur with the candle business, and then my husband and I started a wine business, there were so many lessons that I learned, and most of them through making mistakes, right? I feel like that's what being an entrepreneur is. I have no business background. You know, I was a neurobiology major. I didn't even take any like finance courses or anything. So it really was a whole new education for me, but it's not that hard. You know what I mean? Like, you went to medical school, you think you can't be an entrepreneur, read a couple of books, listened to some podcasts, went to a couple of conferences. And then really I was just, you learn by doing. And so I started Lead Her Summit in 2024, because I wanted a conference where women from all different backgrounds could come and learn things like the art of negotiation, how to hire and fire people. Like, I had to hire a whole team of, you know, assistants and merchandisers and website people and copywriter. And I'm like, how do I know who to, I never learned. I mean, I was a residency program person. I interviewed med students, but I didn't really know how to interview people for jobs. And I got burned so many times where I paid people to do work and the work was not done. And then I didn't know how to fire them because I'm conflict avoidant. And just all these things, and you know, websites and inventory management. I'm like, this is crazy. So I just wanted to create a conference for women who wanted to build a strong personal brand, you know, who had an authentic voice that they wanted to amplify and talk about, like, how do you start posting on social media? You know, to grow your following, like, what are people looking for? What are mistakes to avoid? And so I just put this whole conference together basically by asking my friends to come speak. I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about having this conference. Do you think you could like fly to Dallas in November and give a talk about XYZ? And so many of my girlfriends said yes. Like, that's how the conference got put together. And I did it in 2024. Then we had a retreat in Cabo in 2025. I had the summit again in Dallas in 2025. And then this year's retreat is in Costa Rica next month. And then I'm holding on doing a big, summit this year because it was like 200 women, multiple days, had to rent out a whole hotel. It was like a lot of moving pieces for me and my assistant. It was just a team of two. And this fall, I'm doing a much more intimate retreat aimed at parents or people who hope to be parents one day. And I have a parenting coach that is talking about how to raise emotionally resilient children, how to talk to your kids about money, how to introduce digital devices to your children and how to supervise them so that your kids aren't looking at things on their phone that they're not supposed to be looking at. And then I have a wealth advisor coming and talking about like tax sheltering strategies for, you know, families and things like that. So I'm calling it the Lead Her Family Retreat. And we're doing it at my friend's farm that's an hour outside of Dallas. And she has like kangaroos and lemurs and giraffes and wow, like all these cool animals that you get to pet. Like you get to hold a lemur. Oh, and a sloth. She has a sloth, which I just think sloths are like the coolest animal ever. I don't know why. Maybe because I move fast. So it's like surprising to me that they move so slow. And you can hug a sloth. It's so cool. So we're having the family retreat at her farm. So everybody gets to stay in a little cabin. It's very like rustic and kid friendly. And I have a childcare company that's giving childcare while the CME sessions are going on. So mom and dad can, you know, listen and go to lecture while the kids are being taken care of. And then in the afternoon, everybody gets to like play with the animals and make s'mores and have dinner.
That sounds amazing. Absolutely amazing. All right. So I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but here, you know, here you are. You are an anesthesiologist. You are a mom of twins, for goodness sakes. You are a reality TV star. You are a owner of multiple companies. And now you're organizing retreats for 200 people who are doing these things all over the world. All right. People must ask you it all the time, but I'm going to ask you it too. How do you balance it all? How do you do it all?
Lots of spreadsheets, lots of caffeine. I'm super organized. Like literally all of my life is on spreadsheets. I have a wonderful in-person assistant. I have a wonderful VA in the Philippines. My husband is very supportive. You know, I talk to a lot of women who want to do things, but they're kind of like, I don't know if my husband's going to be on board. And I always say, like, if your spouse is not on board with you maximizing your dreams and going for it, it's not going to work out, right? Because if you have someone at home who's pulling you back and, you know, like I was gone basically every weekend last month at a speaking engagement or something. And my husband was home with the kids and he was okay with that because he knows that I'm trying to build something and grow right now. And then he knows that, you know, later there's like ebbs and flows. You know, there's so many women that are like, oh, I feel so guilty when I'm at work. I'm like, why? And they're like, oh, because I should be with my kids. Well, who said, like, who said should? You know, anytime anyone tells you should, I feel like we need to explore that a little bit more. Is that a societal construct that has been fed to you? You know, did your mom stay home and you feel like you should do what she did for you? So you feel bad? Like, there's more to tease out there for sure. But the way I do it is all, the way I do it all is by staying super organized and having a really good group of people who support me and help me.
Yeah, that's huge. Now you said VA, I assume that's virtual assistant.
Yeah, she's in the Philippines. We've never met, but she's been working for me for like over a year and a half. And I love her dearly. She is the one that scheduled this podcast because she can schedule my calendar. Because the thing with scheduling things is like, can you do this day? No, can you do this day? Can you do? And then it's like, that's just, I don't have time for that, you know, and then things get missed. But she is so on top of it and puts it into my calendar with the Zoom link and all this stuff. So like, when she manages my calendar, it's way better than when I manage my calendar.
Yeah. Now, how'd you find her?
Luck. Just on a friend's VA from the Philippines asked if anyone needed a VA. And I was like, oh, I'll interview her. And when I first had her start working for me, I didn't even think that I would be giving her access to like my emails and my calendar. Cause I was like, oh my God, like that's a privacy issue. I can't have someone in my emails. You know, I was very like not a good delegator, which one of the topics that we had at Lead Her Summit was the art of delegation, right? Cause us type A's, anesthesiologists, like no one cares more than I do. No one can do it as good as me, like all that stuff, right? And so we don't delegate, we just do it ourselves. But at some point, like I was the rate limiting step for like all these things. And once I started being an effective delegator, it like really opened up, you know, a lot of things. But that was a skill that I learned. So I just really got lucky with her. Like other people ask me sometimes, they're like, how do I find a VA as good as yours? Because yours is so good. And I'm like, I have no idea. I just got lucky. It's like finding a great spouse. You know what I mean? Like, they're also like, how did you meet your husband? I'm like, in a bar. I don't recommend it, but that's how we met. You know what I mean? Sometimes I think maybe the universe throws you a few bones.
Yeah. Well, that's fabulous. And, you know, I can completely see the advantages of being able to offload as much as possible, especially when you are doing so many things. Now, what's the breakdown of work between your VA and your in-person assistant?
My in-person assistant, like she's about to take my kiddo to cheer practice because I'm having this call with you. She picks up my dry cleaning, like picked up Valentine's Day treats for the kids to take to school to share. You know, like that kind of stuff. When I'm traveling, because I've been doing a lot of speaking lately, she'll pick up the kids from carpool, make sure that they have a snack and take them to all their activities until their dad gets home in the evening. So she's like basically my backup for in-person things. And then Mari, who's my assistant in the Philippines, I initially hired her to help me with social media, like to help edit videos and like answer DMs, because I get like 200 DMs a day. And I would say like 5% of them are like worthwhile, but like I don't know which 5%. So I don't ever answer my DMs anymore. She answers my DMs. And if it's something that I don't need to see, she just deletes it. But once in a while, it'll be like a nice note from somebody that I went to high school with, like DM'd me and was like, hey, I saw you on TV, which was fun to reconnect with that person. Once in a while, it's a brand that wants to maybe partner together. So she sort of like is triage. She's literally like triage for my inbox, my Instagram DMs, and then she does a lot of, you know, scheduling back and forth, like that won't work, or, you know, people change and things come up. So she's amazing. Like, I don't know what I would do without her.
Fabulous. That's amazing. So tell me a little bit about the book, Joy Prescriptions. What motivated you amidst all the other things you were doing to write a book? What was that process like?
You know, it's funny, when I would give talks or be interviewed for podcasts, sometimes the host would say, so when's your book coming out? And I'd be like, what book? Like, you must have me confused with someone else you interviewed. And they're like, no, you should write a book because you have such a rich, interesting story and you tell it in such a funny way. We really think you should write a book. And I was like, okay. So they planted that seed back in like 2021. But I was like, I don't have time to write a book. Like, who has time for that, you know? And then I met a woman from Real Housewives of New York. We became friends. She already had a book and she gave me a copy of it. I read it and I was like, oh my God, I learned so much about you. And I'm always one of those people that says the book is always better than the movie. That's how I think. If you give me the choice between watching TV or reading a book, I will most likely pick reading a book unless I'm dead tired and I just want to zone out. Because I just think like reading is so much richer than watching TV. I don't know. I just get so much more from reading. And so I pinged her one day and I was like, hey, how did you write this book? And she told me the whole process. You basically get a literary agent, write a proposal. They shop it to all the big publishers. Hopefully you get a big advance and then you start writing. And I was like, oh, so you don't just like write the whole book and then try to get someone to publish it? She was like, no, you only write a proposal that's like a snippet of the book. and hopefully someone buys the rights to it, and then you start writing. And I was like, oh, well, that's the way to do it. So I was like, do you know any good literary agents? And so she introduced me to hers. We had a Zoom, and that was in 2022. And then I got a book deal later in the year, started writing in 2023, turned in my manuscript in 2024, and then the book came out in 2025. So publishing is slow, which any of your listeners who has ever submitted a manuscript to like anesthesiology, ANA, JCA, whatever, it's slow. There's revisions. My editor came back with revisions. Then we went to senior editor and there was more revisions. Sometimes the reviewers contradict each other. Like one wants this way and one wants that way. And I'm like, y'all are going to have to figure it out because I can't please both of you. And yeah, it was a very slow process, but I learned so much, you know, through each of these things, through building my businesses, being on reality TV, being a voice on social media, writing a book, like they've all been such rich experiences. And I've learned so much and different things from each of them that I never would have learned if I just stuck to being in the OR.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right. Well, tell me one thing from the book that people would learn about you if they read it that we haven't covered. Just something fun that they would get out of the book.
Something fun? What's fun? Well, okay. I struggled with infertility. And when I found out that I was pregnant with twin girls, I wanted to name them Sky and Star, because when you knew me at UCSF, I was Tiffany's son.
That's right.
But then I met a man and his last name was Moon. So I became Tiffany Sun Moon. And people are like, what are the odds? Like, that's so crazy. So then I wanted to name the girls Star Sun Moon and Sky Sun Moon. And my husband was like, absolutely not. Those sound like stripper names. And I was like, what do you have against strippers? Anyway, so my children are not Sky and Star.
Well, I would have absolutely loved it if they were. What a great... What a great proposal. I will tell you that I offered my wife a deal when she was pregnant with our first daughter. We didn't know it was a daughter yet. When we found out she was pregnant, and I said, okay, how about this? If it's a girl, you get to name her anything you want. But if it's a boy, I get to name him anything I want. And I want to name him Huckleberry. I want his name to be Huckleberry Walpaw, and we'll call him Huck. Huck Walpaw, I thought would have been amazing. And she said, no way. I cannot imagine. I will never name a child of mine Huckleberry. And it turned out it was a girl. So she would have gotten to name the kid on her own if she had taken the deal, but she did not.
That's okay. I think I would have been no deal as well.
Yeah. You guys are on the same page.
Maybe you can have a dog named Huck. I feel like that would be very cute for a dog.
I pushed for that. We don't have a dog, but my friends got a new dog recently and I was pushing for Huckleberry, but they didn't go for it.
I wanted to name our dog Remy, like Remy Fentanyl, and my husband was like, no.
That's a great dog name. I love that.
I think Remy is so cute. But anyway, maybe someone else can name their dog Remy. And
that's
just
right.
Because he's really fast. That's
there you
why
go.
I forgot to say, he's a Belgian Malinois who it's like a police dog. People think he's a German Shepherd, but he's not. And he is fast. Like, right. I don't know what his max speed is, but it's fast. So I thought it would be so cute if we named him Remy because he's so fast. But
that would have been.
Daniel, my non-medical husband did not sign off.
He wasn't down. All right.
No.
So you've mentioned social media a couple times, and that clearly has played a big role in your career. I interviewed Anesthesia God, who you mentioned recently, and
I love him.
Yeah. Hilarious.
So cool. And for the longest time, I thought he was a woman until I met him in person. And I was like, you're a man. And he's like, I've always been a man. I was like, I don't know why in my head you were a woman.
Yeah, I think a lot. I absolutely thought that. I think a lot of people thought that. I actually was surprised when he came on the show that he was willing to do it, because it was a big gender reveal. And actually, some of the comments that we got online from it were, best gender reveal of all time, right? People considered him coming on the show as the gender reveal. But yes, he's fabulous and just love his content. And I asked him to tell me what some of his favorite stuff was and his favorite content, and he mentioned you. So, you know, clearly you've met and he really admires what you've done. You admire what he's done. So that's fabulous. Tell me a little bit about that. What else do you get from other people's online stuff, and what role has it played in your career in other than what we've already covered?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like when I started, social media was my respite from the hospital, right? I never intended to be what they call like a med influencer, right? Where some people's pages you go on and it's very clear they're a doctor. They're not giving medical advice, but, you know, they're talking about trending medical topics, presenting cases and that kind of stuff. That's not me. And if you look at my page, it's still not me. Maybe 10, 15% of my stuff on social media is medical related, but often then it's like a humorous kind of thing or Happy Doctor's Day or something like that. I don't usually do like cases. I know that my work is watching me very closely, and I always want to err on the side of being conservative. Even all of the content where I'm in the hallway or in an OR, it's an empty hallway or an empty OR. I never make content if I have a patient on the table. I always wait till the end of the day or if I get to work a little bit early and they haven't rolled back yet. Because I just know that they're watching me to slip up and I'm not going to give them that satisfaction. But yeah, social media for me is fun, right? I always say to people, like, technology is a tool. You are the master. Technology is the servant. Remember that, because I think for some people that the roles get reversed and that you become a slave to your phone. You're chasing the followers, chasing the likes, chasing the things like in your DMs all day. Like, it's not real life, you know? Go have an interaction with someone in real life. Put your phone down. Don't sit at a dinner table with a bunch of people and be on your phone, because basically you're telling the people at the table, like, my phone's more interesting than you are. Then why are you sitting at dinner with them? You know, go home and eat dinner and be on your phone then. You know, I just think people need to get a hold of, like, I use social media the way I want to use it. I make friends on there. You know, now that I've been speaking a lot, like, I'm in Chicago, I was in Denver, I was in New York City. Almost every city that I go to speak to, I think to myself, like, oh, who do I follow on socials that, like, lives in Denver? Then I'll DM them and be like, hey, girl, I'm coming to Denver to speak at this thing. Like, are you free to grab a coffee on Tuesday night or something? You know, whatever. And I meet the people that I've been following, and it's so cool to meet them in real life. It's a good way to get leads for speaking. Like, every time I get a speaking gig, we'll ask them, like, oh, how did you find out about me? And they're like, oh, I saw you on social media, or my friend heard you speak at this other event and said you were good. And, you know, it all leads to more things. And, you know, for doctors that say, like, oh, I'm above social media, or I'm not going to be there, like, that's where patients are finding their medical information, whether you like it or not. And so if you can be a voice out there educating people, telling them what to avoid, a trusted voice in the medical space, I think it would be a lost opportunity for doctors not to be on social media. And a lot of my doctor friends, like my two best friends from medical school, aren't on social media at all. And I love that for them. But for people who do want to grow their personal brand and be known as a key opinion leader in their field, I think it's a great platform for them.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, my wife is on all the, like, the Facebook moms groups, right? There's the Facebook mom travel group and the, I don't know, the point me to first class.
Oh my God. I love those people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we call them the Pointer Sisters.
Yeah.
I just got this Bilt credit card and I have no idea how the hell it works, but I've never been able to get points on my mortgage before. And I'm like, I can get points on my mortgage. So I'm like in the group, like, hey, which of these options do I choose and what's going on? And like, these mom Facebook groups are the best.
The amount of stuff we have learned from that. I mean, like, we got some of the most amazing tour guides when we went to France and we were doing the Louvre and all this stuff. And it was all the tour guides my wife found through the Facebook moms travel group.
I know. And it's just, this is the thing. If you are a mom and you are a physician, you have my trust and friendship until proven otherwise. Like, the fact that you just got through medical school and residency and you practice clinical medicine and you have kids, like, let's just be friends because I already know everything about you. I know that you're a high achieving. I know that you're organized or you wouldn't be able to handle this much in your life. You know what I mean? I know that I can count on you. It's just, I love these groups so much.
Yeah, my wife feels the same way.
I got free tickets to Taylor Swift circa 2023 on the Eras tour for free from one of the other moms in the Facebook doctor group. Like,
wow.
Crazy. And it's just, you know, anytime that I can do anything to help people in there, you know, it's great.
Yeah, amazing. All right. Well, what's next for you, Tiffany? You've done so much. Maybe the answer could easily be rest. Yes, sleep.
Rest. Well, okay. My twin girls are 11, which is such a precious age because I remember when my stepdaughter turned like 14, 15 was kind of around the time that she didn't want to hang out with me as much. I was less cool. And so I think about this time with my girls and I'm like, oh, I only have a few good years left, you know, and I know that they come back and everything, but they're so fun right now. We like the same things like beauty, skincare, shopping, movies. They want to go to Lululemon and Sephora. I want to go to Lululemon and Sephora. It works great, except it's all my money, you know, but they're just such a fun age right now. And I just love hanging out with them and talking to them about school and fun stuff. And they're still kids. They're still not like teenagers just yet. And so I love traveling with them and just exploring and doing all the fun things. So that was another reason I'm not doing the big Lead Her Summit for 200 women this year and more of like a family thing. And just spending a lot of time with my girls. I say no to a lot of opportunities. I turn down most of the brand deals that come my way. For speaking, I only will travel if it's an organization that I feel really strongly about. You know, if I have to travel and be away from my kids for one, sometimes two nights. And I think I'm okay with that. You know, there was a time where I said yes to everything because I felt like I had planted all these seeds and now that they were growing, like I wasn't not going to harvest, but harvesting all the time also really burned me out. It had an impact on my marriage. And so right now I'm kind of in the season of, you know, being selective about what I do and just spending a lot of time with my girls.
Well, that sounds amazing. I have three daughters and I can't think of anything better than spending time with them. So I'm with you 100% on that. I also think the smart money is that at some point, Tiffany Moon will have another endeavor, whether it's another company or another book or more fabulous things to share with the world. I'm sure that's coming at some point.
Yes, you will be the first to hear about it.
Fabulous. Well, Tiffany, let's go to the part of our show where we make random recommendations. What's something fun you'd recommend the audience check out?
Okay, I met Charlie Sheen at a charity gala 3 months ago, and he is the nicest guy. I would have never, like, imagined him doing cocaine and hanging out with strippers and being bad Charlie Sheen. He has mellowed out. He's, like, in his 60s. He has a book called The Book of Sheen, which is his memoir, and he gave it to me, signed it. And it was such an interesting read to learn that he was like originally supposed to be like the Karate Kid, you know, Mr. Miyagi, Daniel-san, but he like lost that role and the other guy got it. And, you know, just his history with addiction and drugs and getting HIV and all that stuff. It's just like, I just love memoirs, you know, because like they say the truth is stranger than fiction. You know what I mean? And I just can't believe he's like lived this big, huge life, but in person, he's super mellow and personable.
Very cool. All right. The Book of Sheen. That's a great recommendation.
And Joy Prescriptions.
Of course. Of course, I was going to recommend that.
Okay. So,
yeah. You have got to check out Joy Prescriptions for sure. Yeah. Also, I'll say, because I'm with you, I think the book is always better than the movie. But because of that, one of my favorite books of all time is Project Hail Mary. I don't know if you've read it, but it's such an amazing book by Andy Weir. And they now have a movie that just came out. And I almost wasn't going to see the movie because I figured, how could it? The book was so good. I thought the movie would just be a disappointment. But my wife and I decided to go. And so we just went a few days ago. And it was actually very good. I was really taken aback by how well they did with translating that book into a movie. Obviously, the book is way better. And if you have a choice, read the book. But if you want to see the movie Project Hail Mary, I think they do a pretty good job.
Awesome.
Tiffany, this has been fabulous. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jed.
All right. Hopefully you got as much out of that as I did. That was really fantastic. Let us know what you thought. Go to the website, acrac.com, where you can leave a comment. Others can learn from what you have to say. If you are a fan of the show, you can follow us. We're on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are on Reddit. And we are on Instagram. I'm at Jay Wolpaw on Twitter, and we're at ACRAC Podcast, and you can find us on all those other platforms as well. If you are a fan of the show, please consider going to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leaving a comment and a rating. It really helps others find the show. If you'd like to support the making of the show, please consider going to patreon.com/ACRAC. That's patreon.com/ACRAC, where you can become a patron of the show. Even if it's just a dollar or two that you pledge, it makes a big difference, and we really appreciate it. You can also make donations anytime by going to paypal.me/ACRAC or looking up Jay Wolpaw on Venmo. Thank you so much to those who have already made donations and become patrons. We really appreciate it. Thanks, as always, to our fantastic ACRAC crew. Sonia Amanat is our tech lead. Taylor Duggan, William Mao, and Rachel Furman are our production assistants and social media managers. Thanks so much for all you do. Our original ACRAC music is by Dr. Dennis Kuo. You can check out his website at studymusicproject.com. All right. That is it for today. For the ACRAC podcast, I'm Jed Wolpaw. Thanks for listening. Remember, what you're doing out there every day is really important and valued.